Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back on a Tuesday afternoon edition of Jonathan Taylor Thomas Talks Major League Baseball 2020 Los Angeles Angels Review Edition. John of Fangraphs.com is here. John, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. How was your Valentine's weekend, John?
Uneventful, quiet. I was gonna say solitary, but that sounds too like depressing.
Well, solitary seems to have a singular activity. If you're in solitary confinement, I don't think usually implies there are two people involved.
Yeah, that's true. But it was very quiet. To me, it's not much of a holiday, really. I've never particularly understood Valentine's Day or why it's really a thing, but it was quiet and uneventful. So,
did you make this pitch to the to the lady, John?
No, but I didn't need to, so.
It's always a tough pitch. Did you get fish or anything? Did Fisher get any Valentine's love?
Oh, absolutely not, no.
No! I would have assumed he would have gotten something, John.
Dogs don't care what day it is. They don't need...
I mean, everyone's looking for an excuse to give their dog more love and affection, John.
He gets so much already that I don't even know if he'd really understand extra.
You don't think so?
He's got a good life.
Sounds like he's got a good life. John, what have you been reading since the last week? What are you diving into as of late?
Just catching up on all my all my old New Yorkers, mostly. That's the majority of it.
How far back are you going?
I'm backed up as to like last March. So my goal right now is just not to let the current New Yorkers catch up to the present, or not to have the current New Yorkers catch up to where I am in the past, basically.
Right.
I don't want to get lapped. Mm-hmm. So Just trying to make my way through those quickly.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Well, don't forget, folks, you can listen to this very podcast Monday through Friday on ChaseThomasPodcast.com. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener and you're listening right now on your iPhone, leave us a 5-star rating and a review. John and most notably Fisher the dog would greatly appreciate it. John, there's some sad news items that I want to start with.
All right.
Edwin Encarnacion, who feels like he has been playing baseball forever, might not be playing baseball this year because the NL doesn't seem like they are going to adapt a universal DH, at least for the 2021 season, because that would make too much sense and give more people jobs. It's probably not going to happen, it seems like. So he said, quote, "The decision that there will be no universal DH in the 2021 season has greatly affected my chances of signing," Encarnacion said. "I want a team to give me the opportunity to play daily to show that I can still produce." Do you think this is it? Because Edwin Encarnacion seems to want to be an everyday player still to this point. Or do you think he'll eventually pop up somewhere? Maybe it's just in the middle of the season after injuries and things like that.
Yeah, that seems more likely, barring the Universal DH coming into existence. The other thing is, even if the Universal DH does come into existence before the season starts, a guy like Edwin Encarnacion, for as good as he has been in the past, and really, last year was his first bad year in a while. It's not like this has been like I haven't looked at the underlying metrics, but, you know, it's not like I don't think this has been some long, steady decline where it's like, well, of course no one should be employing Edwin Encarnacion. But I kind of don't imagine the teams are going to want to pay him anyway. That's kind of the thing. I know we talked about it a little last week with regards to, or maybe the week before, with regards to kind of what the value of the expanded DH to the players union and how the league seems to be using it as the carrot for the stick that is expanded playoffs. But the reality is I can't imagine it would lead to that many more jobs anyway. Like, yes, it'd be 15 more DH spots in the National League, but how many of those teams are just going to use whoever they already have on hand, as opposed to going out and signing someone like Encarnacion? And I don't know for sure. I mean, it just depends on which teams feel like they have the personnel to fill the DH spot internally anyway. But that kind of veteran hitter, especially, unless it's someone like a Nelson Cruz, really isn't going to be getting that much interest anyway. I think, like you said, more likely as someone who kind of gets signed mid-season or during the year to fill in for an injury to someone who's injured, as opposed to, because the thing with Encarnacion is, like, he really can't play any other position. He is just a DH. So I don't know. It of course limits the market already, and the fact that he's also 37, going to be 38, you know, that last year was a bad year, and that, you know, older players tend to fall off a cliff. It's not just like a, you know, a gradual descent. It's sometimes it just happens all at once. But, yeah, I just have a hard time seeing Encarnacion getting a job right now unless the Universal DH randomly pops up. And even then, I think most teams would probably opt for whatever cheap option they have in-house or a cheap option on the market. I know he already signed, but, you know, something like – and he's not – he's actually a decent defender, but someone like an Adam Duvall, for example, would be, I think, more what teams would be interested in than a 38-year-old who's coming off a bad season and who really cannot play anywhere else. Because – truth be told, I think if you're an NL team, even if you have the universal DH, ideally whoever is DHing is still someone who can play the field in some capacity. You're probably not going to hand it over to a Nelson Cruz type who just cannot play the field at all unless they're an exceptional hitter a la Nelson Cruz. So, I mean, Encarnacion has been an exceptional hitter, but I kind of struggle to see who's going to make the move right now, given that, you know, there's not... It does feel like most teams are pretty set in their off-season shopping. I think most teams are pretty well done at this point, and everyone left is probably just waiting to see who gets hurt and what spots open up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But we shall see where he might end up. Also, let's not rule out putting him in the outfield in Cleveland. Cleveland's going to be very boring to watch this year. Let's throw him out there. Let's see what happens.
Might as well.
Yeah, just
even with however bad he is defensively, he can't be that much worse a total package outfielder than
insert name here in the Cleveland outfield.
Yeah, like I was going to say, I think I'd rather have him out there than like
Can we get him and Framel Reyes in the corners? Can we do that?
Why would you do that to poor center fielder? who even is the Indian center? Or who even is Cleveland center fielder? I don't actually know.
It's going to be sad, whoever it is.
It is.
The Mets agreed to a deal with Kevin Pillar. John, do you like the fit for them? I like it.
It's weird because they already signed Albert Almora, who's a good defender but can't hit and is right-handed. And now they signed Pillar, who is a worse defender but a better hitter and is also right-handed. So I'm not really sure how they plan on the thing with the Mets outfield is how exactly is all the playing time out there going to shake out? I mean, Conforto is pretty much locked into to right field, and it seems like left field is going to be some – I guess it's going to be Dom Smith because the Mets probably want his bat in the lineup, but they have Pete Alonso at first base, and without the universal DH, they can't just slot one of them there. I assume J.D. Davis will also get playing time out there. And then in center, you have Brandon Nimmo, but now you also have Almora and Pillar, who kind of fill this – not quite the same role. Pillar is a better hitter. Almora is a better defender. But to me, it's just kind of strange that, you know, because like, they don't complement each other because you can't turn them into a platoon. So unless the idea is Pillar is kind of your general fourth outfielder and Almora is your general fifth outfielder, and maybe that's not the worst decision because late in games with leads, you're probably going to want to put Pillar and Almora both in the game in place of Nimmo and whoever's in left, be it Smith or Davis, they're both bad defenders. But to me, it just seems like this seems like a more complicated solution than just signing Jackie Bradley Jr., which it seems like the Mets have given up on. And I understand that signing Pillar probably reflects the fact that Bradley Jr. is asking for more money than the Mets feel comfortable giving him. And on the one hand, I understand that. But on the other hand, I thought the whole point of the Steve Cohen Mets was that money wasn't going to be a factor anymore, that they were just going to get the best player for the position, regardless of how much it costs, because well, that's how you win, is you just sign the best, you get the best players you can, and you worry about the rest later. You know, it just seems like it would be way easier for everyone involved for Jackie Bradley Jr. to be there instead of just having Pillar and Almora just kind of rotate in oddly. Although I guess if the Mets are committed to having Nimmo, Dominic Smith, and Conforto all in the lineup on a regular basis, and Pete Alonso, without the universal DH, I guess there's not really much they can do unless they plan on benching Smith and Nimmo semi-regularly. So I don't like, I mean, I guess if that is what they want to do, then Pillar and Almora makes sense as just fourth and fifth outfielders that they can just plug in late in games if they just want Nimmo and Smith and then I guess occasionally J.D. Davis out there regardless. But it does feel like the easiest solution in terms of like the best player was Jackie Bradley Jr. Although I do suppose that the Mets particular, I mean, this is just kind of the problem with the Mets. Their particular configuration is just really complicated to figure out because they have more hitters than they really have spots for them. They more than I think any other National League team really need the universal DH so they can just flip Dom Smith and Pete Alonso between first base and DH as needed. And then, you know, open left field up, move Nimmo over there and then sign Bradley as a true center fielder. But that does not seem to be in the cards. And so, you know, the only real solution, I guess, after that is to do something like what they're doing now, which is get a couple of backup outfielders who are defensively sound and can, and in the case of Pillar, can handle themselves at least a little bit at the plate, but who you don't have to worry about, you know, you don't want them starting unless something goes wrong.
Yeah. And I also just think that there is something to just building out a lot of depth where they're like, well, yeah, maybe both of these guys just won't be here for a full season. And we would rather be in a situation where we're not scrambling as we make a pennant chase. That we just they would rather have too much than not enough, I think.
Yeah, and that's sensible too, and that's something we haven't really seen from the Mets a whole lot in years past. Actual depth. So yeah, this is a good depth move for them because when something invariably happens to one of those three regular outfielders, you know, now they have a major league caliber player who can step in one way or the other. Like, no, you don't want Pillar or Almora starting for you on the regular, but that's way better than having to drag up the equivalent of Matt Dendecker or Travis or what's his name, Kirk Neuenheis, like the Mets have done in years past, and hoping that they're somehow going to be acceptable when more likely than not, they're just not.
No, But we shall see what happens there. Justin Wilson signs with the Yankees. We've talked about the Yankees and their depth in the pitching department. Does this move interest you at all?
I mean, it's interesting insofar as this bullpen seems to have a lot of variety to it. I mean, it's you've got the weird heat that is Chapman. You've got Britton's power sinker. You've got Chad Green's fastball slider combo. You've got Darren O'Day submarining from the right side. Now you've got Wilson from the left side. I mean, he's not a submariner, but you know, this Yankees bullpen, it seems to me like they're trying to follow kind of the template that the Rays set last year, which is a bullpen that isn't so much about overpowering you, but is as so much as about different looks. And we saw a lot of that with the way they would use Aaron Loop or Ryan Thompson or other guys who come at you from so many different arm angles. And I don't know Wilson's arm angle off the top of my head, but I do have to imagine that, you know, a bullpen. I do wonder if the Yankees are kind of following that path of, we want a bullpen where you're just seeing something, not just seeing something different in terms of stuff and in terms of handedness every time, where you're seeing something different in terms of arm angle, in terms of where the ball is coming from, in terms of, you know, just something to keep hitters from getting any kind of balance against, you know, it's already hard enough for hitters to find consistency against relief pitching. I think something like what the Yankees are doing with this, you know, mix of handedness and arm angles and all that other fun stuff makes it that much tougher. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's fine. Otherwise, I mean, Wilson is a perfectly fine kind of generic bulk lefty to have in your bullpen, because, you know, certainly he's not the guy who's going to handle high leverage innings, or at least I can't imagine that being the case when they have Zach Britton already there. But he's definitely a guy you can toss out in the middle innings, and he's definitely a guy who you can feel, I think, relatively comfortable with facing not just obviously left-handers, but also facing right-handers too.
For sure. Last couple of quick notes here on some more bargain bin signings. Justin Turner back to Los Angeles. We flirted with the idea of putting him in Oakland or a situation like that where he made more sense perhaps, but the Dodgers keep Justin Turner. And speaking of depth, I mean, just another piece to keep their momentum going and to keep them on the right track for a potential repeat, right?
Yeah, and I think this is probably the least surprising reunion of the offseason. I know we talked about, you know, maybe the Braves, maybe some other team, but I think it was always going to be the Dodgers. They're the team that just makes the most sense for a guy who is, you know, a very high-tier hitter and a good player overall, but someone who is not the best at staying on the field and staying healthy. And the Dodgers are probably best suited out of any team in baseball to, if Turner goes down for an extended period of time, either use someone internally, be it, you know, maybe it's, I don't know if Gavin Lux has played much third, but more likely than not, it's Edwin Rios, but maybe there is someone like Lux they can plug in there. You know, they have options. Or, you know, who can just go out and get a better player if Turner's going to be out for an extended period of time. So, yeah, I think that obviously makes sense. It's a good match. Turner's still, you know, still a very good hitter, even as he gets older. And I think this is just the one that made the most sense. I'm a little surprised no one else really jumped in, but I also imagine, too, that Turner more likely than not wanted to stay in Los Angeles, all things being equal. So it's just a matter of getting the right offer so that he could.
Yeah. It's all you can really say. Just seems about right. Last one, James Paxton, speaking of things seeming right, on his way back to Seattle, along with Ken Giles. Seattle, Jerry DePoto, just signing some guys. Trademark, John Taylor.
Jerry DePoto does love signing his guys, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. He loves trading for him, like signing him. He loves the interaction, or the interactions, the transactions, if you will. He's a big transactions guy.
That said, I mean, when it comes to Paxton and Giles, like, they're pretty low risk moves in both cases, in that, you know, they didn't cost much. Paxton was $8.5 million. I forget what Giles was, but it wasn't much more. And Giles isn't even going to pitch this year. He'll be a factor for 2022 and beyond. So in that regard, I mean, I think with Paxton, the idea is there to raise the floor of the rotation, because Paxton is a really high ceiling guy. Mm-hmm. It's a good move, at least for the fans too, that you bring back someone who the fans like, who they care about, they already have a connection to. It does help you fill some innings in your rotation. And if Paxton does pitch really well in the first half of the season and Seattle is far out of it, maybe they can move him at the deadline and have him be an impact guy somewhere else and get some prospects back. So I think it makes sense for Seattle. And likewise, Giles, I think, makes sense as someone who can contribute when that team is a little closer to contention. I don't think anyone, I know we'll probably talk about the Mariners at some point in the next couple of weeks, but that doesn't really feel like a team that's all that close right now. I'm also not sure what they're doing.
Like, the Mariners one's going to be like, I just don't even know what this team's existence is.
And that's the thing, even beyond Paxton and Giles, like, I got no problem with either of those signings. But if you're a Mariners fan, you're sitting there being like, wasn't the whole idea supposed to be that we were going to be contending by now?
Yes.
And instead our offseason consists of a one-year pillow contract for a guy who probably won't crack 120 innings and an incentive deal for a reliever we're not going to see till next year? Like, that's our offseason? You know, it does really feel like the Mariners have very slow played their rebuild in terms of, you know, they've just been very quiet the last few years. And I get that that's kind of part of the rebuild playbook because, you know, you see it with the Orioles, you see it with the Tigers. There's not really a point in making those big signings in those immediate years right after you start to tear it down because, well, then why did you tear it down in the first place? But it does really feel like we are, you know, the Mariners rebuild has kind of, I want to say it's lost the plot. I think this year will probably go a long way toward determining what direction it heads. But it does feel like things have slowed down or at least not really matched the public pronouncements of Jerry DePoto in terms of when Mariners fans can expect to see a contender again, which is, of course, all the more frustrating for Mariners fans because, you know, they haven't seen a playoff team in two decades. You know, so on one hand, it's like, well, what's another year or two? But on the other hand, it's like, shouldn't these folks get a playoff team at some point? Like, how long can you really keep putting this off, so to speak? You know, at some point you have to move, especially, you know, it's worth wondering when is the AL West going to be this open again? Maybe next year, there's room for a new team going forward, but this is definitely a year where the division is, I don't know about wide open. And we talked about Houston last week, and I think we both agree that Houston's a good team, but they're certainly not a juggernaut anymore.
No,
you know, there is an opportunity.
They're going the other way.
I think we talked about that. You know, there's a brief window here in between Houston's, you know, where Houston's current core is kind of starting to age out and their farm system isn't really producing anything yet to replace them, where, you know, there's a vulnerability there. And similarly with the A's kind of taking this offseason off and the Angels, which I know we're going to get into them, they're their own problem. But it definitely feels like there is a window there for another team to get aggressive and kind of move up. But instead, the Mariners are just sticking to whatever this plan is,
mm-hmm.
where they're going to be bad this year, but maybe next year they'll be okay. I don't know. I think for me, it's less about what are the Mariners doing and more, what is the timeline at this point? You know, I think if you were to ask Jerry DePoto, he would probably say at this point, we're waiting for Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez to get here because they're going to be the core of whatever we do going forward, along with guys like Evan White, maybe Justice Sheffield, the other top draft picks they've made, the other prospects they've gotten. You know, I think it's probably just a waiting game, and certainly losing the entire minor league season last year probably threw a wrench into things. But it does just feel like Seattle is missing an opportunity here to try to get better at a time when it does really feel like somewhere in the neighborhood of 85 to 89 wins could probably take the West. I guess the question at that point is, does the Seattle roster, even if they had made a bunch of moves this winter, actually get you to that point? And I mean, that's a whole, like I said, when we get to the Mariners, I'm sure we'll talk about what paths they could have taken, but, you know, it's at least getting back to the topic at hand. Like, I like Paxton, I like Giles, but I do just wonder kind of what is the timeline right now for Seattle? Because it does feel a little unclear.
Yeah. Speaking of unclear, the Los Angeles Angels, John Taylor. That's where we're at in the AL West preview/review series on this very podcast. Billy Epler, I feel like you and I, before last season, posited that it did not look good for Billy Epler to retain his job. That if we had to guess, he would not be the Angels general manager in 2021. And let me check my notes here. He is not the general manager in 2021. The Angels pulled from my Atlanta Braves to rebuild their front office. Do you like what they have done, what Artie Moreno has done on that front at least?
I mean, they had to make a change because clearly what Epler was doing wasn't working. I think we talked a little before in seasons previous about this kind of bargain bin approach to free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine hampered in large part because of the contract given out to Albert Pujols and how that's just kind of hung over the franchise for going on a decade now, up until last winter when they gave a lot of money to Anthony Rendon. But otherwise, it just seemed like Epler was just kind of tooling around at the margins with reclamation projects and one-year guys and so on and so forth, as opposed to really investing in the players who make a difference. Because the truth is, I mean, a roster with Mike Trout and a healthy Shohei Ohtani, really, that's not one where you really need to be tinkering around the edges. That's one where you need, like, you already have a leg up. You know, you need to add impact to that, because otherwise you're wasting the, like, I think that's the thing. Billy Epler lost his job as much as anything else for wasting numerous years, the best years of Mike Trout's career, you know, without a doubt. And that's a crime, and he should have been probably let go a while ago.
That's
and
a
I'm
crime.
Not surprised. I'm not surprised that at the same time that when it came to picking a new GM, that Moreno went for a guy in Perry Manassian, who, coming from the Braves organization, is used to both working with a limited budget, because that's what the Braves do, but also good at internally filling holes and using homegrown options to do stuff. Because if not, I mean, if nothing else, the Braves have gotten and deserve high marks for being able to do that year in and year out. And Manassian, as part of the player development side over there, has presumably played a very large role in making that happen. So I'm not surprised that, you know, if Moreno's looking back on the last, you know, let's say 6 years of what the Angels have done, and seeing, okay, you know, our farm system has not really produced a whole lot of talent. We are not doing well in terms of player development. Guys who come here don't really seem to get better. The free agents we signed don't perform as well as we thought they would. You know, we're forced to fill roster holes with a lot of cheap veterans who just aren't very good. Like, we need to undergo a change in how we do things, and that probably starts internally in terms of better player development and better drafting. And if that's the case, then Manassian makes sense. At the same time, though, you know, you obviously can't ignore the major league side of things. And I do think the Angels probably could have stood to be a little more aggressive this winter. I think the big one that they'll probably miss, or at least that they missed out on, so to speak, is Trevor Bauer. You know, hate him or love him, I'm not a fan, but Bauer would have made this rotation much better. And I think that's something where, you know, pitching has always been the bugaboo of this team, or at least the long-standing one for the last few years. So, you know, wouldn't it make sense to sign the best pitcher out there? Although I can't imagine, too, there's that complication of, well, we just gave Anthony Rendon a ton of money. Now you want us to give a ton of money to Trevor Bauer, too? Like, you know, our payroll can't really support that. I mean, maybe it can, maybe it can't. But, you know, I get the sense that that's, you know, that's the thing where it does seem like, instead of, and I know we're going to get to the rotation in a little bit, instead of going for the best guy they could get there, they've kind of just, you know, decided, okay, why don't we just staple together two cheaper pitchers, and that'll hopefully help, and maybe do a six-man rotation thing. But, I mean, I don't hate what the Angels have done this offseason. For the most part, I think Manassian is kind of, you know, he's been, on the one hand, he's been given the blessing that is Mike Trout on his roster. On the other hand, there are a lot of holes to fill on this roster otherwise. And I think he's done pretty well targeting players, especially who might be, you know, whose contracts are a little overpriced for what they are, but where they can kind of pay it down and use those players to fill backfill holes. You know, some guys like Dexter Fowler or Alex Cobb or Jose Iglesias, where they basically just buy them off of other teams. Because they could use them. And I think that's, you know, if you have financial leverage, if you have financial flexibility, that's a good way of using it. It's just, we'll buy off your still useful veterans whom you just don't want to pay anymore. And, you know, I think that's relatively smart. I just think that it works best if you're coupling it with, oh, and we're going to sign one really good player too, because you can't just, you know, this Angels team last year won what, or would have, I guess, not one because it was a 60-game season, but the Angels last year won 26 games out of 60, which is a winning percentage of .433, which would have been 70 wins over a full season. This was not a good team last year, and I don't really know that simply adding Alex Cobb and Dexter Fowler and Jose Iglesias raises the floor or the ceiling all that much compared to, say, signing Bauer or a combination of. Again, I don't know the finances. We never know, but it does feel like, you know, if you're the Angels, you know, why does it make more sense to splurge on a combo of Trevor Bauer and George Springer and figure the rest out later? Or does it make more sense to get a combination of like Alex Cobb and Jose Quintana and Jose Iglesias and Dexter Fowler and just kind of hope that the pieces already on the roster will be enough. And that, because it does just feel like at this point that the Angels are kind of just killing time until Pujols' contract is up. I wonder if that's maybe the main driver here, but again, not knowing the finances, like, I can't say for sure. It just does feel to me like this is a team where, especially again, you know, with the West as open as it is, this may have been the time to do another Rendon style addition.
Yep.
You know, raise the floor and the ceiling at the same time. And again, while Mike Trout still has a prime left, we don't know obviously how, you know, what Mike Trout's decline is going to look like or when it's going to start, but it's inevitable. You know, it will have to happen at some point. And every year that passes is theoretically at least 1 year closer to that starting. You know, you don't have an indefinite window of contention with Mike Trout. You only have so much time. And to me, it just feels like, well, then make the most of it. You know, I understand why the Angels have done what they've done. It just does feel like they could do more. And again, barring an ability to see the books, like it remains kind of curious as to why they don't do more.
I think we got to trust Artie Moreno on this front. Do you estimate the Angels are still close? Because when you look at their pitching last year, I was struck by two things with the Angels. One, how good Rendon really was for the Angels last year and how good him and Trout are figured to be for the next several years. But also just like they hit really well. They had a lot of guys who you would not necessarily have believed would pop the way they did, especially in terms of WRC plus, but like the young pitching, solid FIPs across the board. Like you looked around, you're like, not a lot of disasters. There's only one disaster in the starting pitching front. And, it's old friend Julio Teheran, who I knew was bad last year, but goodness, just an absolute train wreck in Los Angeles last year. Pour one out for old friend and perpetual opening day starter Julio Teheran. But it was just interesting because I feel like I did not suspect to see the kind of numbers that I saw when perusing the Angels numbers from last season.
Well, I think with the Angels, at least last year was very much a stars and scrubs approach. I mean, obviously Trout and Rendon were excellent and, you know, they got some good contributions out of the likes of Tommy La Stella. And David Fletcher looks like an up-and-coming young guy they can probably bank on going forward. I think what will be really interesting to see this year is what comes out of Jared Walsh and Max Stassi in particular. Stassi is currently lined up as the starting catcher, doesn't really have any competition in that regard other than, you know, how you feel about Anthony Bemboom, which is just a fantastic name. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they have Kurt Suzuki now, but Suzuki at this point in his career is very much just veteran backup. He's not a guy you really want playing a full, playing a full slate.
He's also not really someone I think you want to have a whole conversation with.
No, not really. No. But the thing is, like, again, like I noted, like the problem with the Angels, they had to plug so many holes with so many below average options. I mean, you mentioned Teheran just as one of them. But, you know, they're out there giving starts to the likes of Jose Suarez and Dylan Peters and Matt Andrees. And, like, you know, they gave 166 plate appearances to a below average Justin Upton, 106 plate appearances to a very bad Luis Rengifo, who, again, the Dodgers could have traded for Jock Peterson and Ross Stripling in one of the most baffling non-moves I think I've ever seen in the last few years. This team was only a little bit better than its record in large part because the lineup just didn't really hit for a while. Pujols continues to be just a vacuum. Otani just we talked about last week, a lot of the Angels' success going forward, I feel like, depends on how healthy Shohei Otani is and what he can add. Because having him as a third hitter behind Trout and Rendon really does give you a lineup you can work with. Part of that, too, is going to be Joe Adell, who looked really bad in his major league debut and maybe needs a little more time at the minor league level, but is still, you know, a top-flight prospect going forward. And then some of that is just better pitching development. Obviously, the Angels did great work in turning Dylan Bundy back into a viable starter. You know, Griffin Canning has shown flashes. Jaime Barria has shown flashes. Andrew Haney, I think, at this point is probably just a league-average starter, but there's nothing wrong with that. And then you add in guys like Quintana and Cobb who have that we've had that success in the past, you know, certainly have the tools to be successful again. But again, just a lot of it is going to depend on how well you can develop these players. I think the other thing you kind of worry about too with the Angels pitching wise is the bullpen. There's not a whole lot of like high-end talent there right now. I know they got Raisel Iglesias, and I thought that was a good trade for them to pick him up in what's basically a salary dump by the Reds. But otherwise, the rest of that bullpen is, it feels pretty suspect to me. There's not a whole lot of kind of high upside in a lot of these guys. I think Mike Mayers is probably their best returning reliever. And after that, it's kind of a lot of question marks as to, you know, health and performance. But I guess that's the thing. Like, I just look at this roster overall, and just right now it feels very 500 to me, you know?
Which is a shame because we have to bring it all back in the context of what the AL West looks like this year. And there was an opening, and there's just no reason for a team that employs Anthony Rendon, Shohei Ohtani, and Mike Trout to be this just kind of bleh, this middle of the road. And I don't know.
Ohtani, at least you can understand with the injuries. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And if that's the case, then that's the case. But for everyone else, it just does, like, again, this is where the struggles in player development really kind of rear their head. Because, you know, Andrew Haney has turned out to be pretty much league average. Obviously, there's nothing they could have done about something like Tyler Skaggs. That's, you know, a tragedy beyond their control. But, you know, their rotation is going to have
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Two homegrown guys. One is Haney, who, as I've mentioned already multiple times, is pretty much league average. The other is Griffin Canning, who can't stay healthy. Their bullpen has a fair number of homegrown guys, but they aren't particularly good. You know, obviously Trout is a fantastic example of player development gone right. But beyond that, you know, the other success stories there are David Fletcher and maybe Jared Walsh. You know, this team has just had to import constantly. And because it doesn't spend big in the free agent market, except for every now and again, you know, it's had to fill with options like Dexter Fowler and Jose Iglesias, who are fine. They're good players, but they're pretty much league average players. You know, you just don't have a lot of upside because you're not targeting the players who do have a lot of upside. You're just hoping that the players already there who have upside discover it. And a lot of that is just them staying healthy or productive. But I don't know. I just, again, you look at this Angels roster and you just feel like, okay. You know, I don't even know if dark horse contender makes sense, because I mean, if they finish around 500, they'll be a contender. But like, this just doesn't have the feel of a team that does really anything more than play around 500 and kind of hang around the edges of the wild card race for a little bit. You know, there's just not enough total talent, and they're still just trying to backfill long existing roster holes with kind of, you know, with whatever veterans they can kind of get their hands on.
Yeah. And we're at the bottom of the barrel now. Like, I don't really know. Is there anybody left over that they could still sign that would intrigue you at all?
Not that I can think of. I mean, rotation-wise, no one who's still available as a starting pitcher really makes any difference over who they already have. Yeah. I think if you're looking at, you know, where are the holes on this team currently, left field is still a problem. You know, Justin Upton has aged in dog years the last couple seasons, mm-hmm. and just seems to be approaching the edge of the cliff. Catcher, I think, is an open question mark as to whether or not Stassi can hold the job down there. First base with Jared Walsh, I think, is an open question. He was good, and they were both good last year. And I think it behooves the Angels to see what's there on a full time basis.
Yeah. Dexter Fowler is now in the mix, which is interesting.
They have Dexter Fowler. I don't really see anything where anyone they could add right now would make enough of an impact, because it's very unlikely that anyone you pluck off free agency at this point is a better outfielder than, say, Dexter Fowler, or really gives you any more catcher than Stassi theoretically could. I think maybe bullpen-wise, you might want to kick around and see what's out there. I think Trevor Rosenthal would make a lot of sense for this team, as he would for a fair number of others, just as kind of another, you know, semi-dependable relief arm. Because this isn't a team like Houston where they just have a lot of pitchers in the farm system they can just kind of throw at whatever bullpen problems that exist. This team's bullpen is already pretty mediocre, mm-hmm. and it could stand to get a fair amount better. I just don't really know how, because realistically the best reliever on the market is either Rosenthal or Tyler Clippard. And
fine. You could do a lot worse than those guys, but they're also, I guess, another situation here. It's like, why weren't the, I guess, you know, they got Rice Iglesias is fine, but why not also be in on the likes of, say, Brad Hand or, you know, make Greg Holland's not the best, but like, you know, why not see what you can, what, whether or not what Trevor, you know, could they have not beat what the Mets offered Trevor May? You know, it just feels like they're, the bullpen in particular is something where the Angels, once they got Iglesias, are kind of like, okay, that's as far as we feel it really feel like going. And I don't really know that I understand that, because again, this is not a, it doesn't look like a particularly good bullpen to me.
No, I don't think so. But like we've always said in this podcast, like if the bullpen's your biggest concern going into a season, things are pretty good. But I think they also have a myriad of other concerns. And I also wonder, too, with Dexter Fowler, if part of the thinking there was we bring him in and maybe this will help Joe Adell. Because I think Joe Adell is going to start the season in the minors. And if that's
probably,
the case,
yeah,
then maybe you want to have a pros pro, guy who's won a World Series, a guy who just knows how to be a quality outfielder and a guy who brings it every day. Like, I wonder if that's part of it, is just to have that veteran there. So when Adell does get called back up next year, he'll have somebody like Fowler to go to and to help, right? Is that it? I wonder if that's part of their thinking.
That makes sense. I agree with that. I hadn't particularly thought of that, but I think, yeah, between Fowler and Upton, Adell certainly has plenty of veteran, and obviously Trout has plenty of veteran guys who can kind of, you know, show them the ropes. And I do think that makes sense, that, you know, what the Angels saw out of Adell last year probably convinced them. Even if last year was a weird, fluky, bad season that kind of screwed people up, we need to have some kind of insurance policy in place, you know, and make him kind of earn the job. Maybe it wouldn't be the worst idea for him to start in the minors, make him earn it. And until he does so, to have a guy in Fowler who is certainly not a star anymore, but can at least hold the fort down for a little bit. It's just ultimately, though, it's just like the ceiling for this team doesn't feel particularly high. Because the guys who make that ceiling higher are either already in place in the form of Trout and Rendon, and we already know what they could do, or it's guys like Ohtani where it depends a lot on health. You know, otherwise it's competence. I think that's kind of what the Angels are kind of made their offseason about, was just baseline competence. I just think they probably could have stood to add some upside along there too, because it's not just all about, like, you know, plugging holes, which clearly the Angels had to do. It's about upgrading the entire, I guess, ship, to keep this metaphor going. And I'm just not sure that they really did that this offseason. But again, I don't know what the financial aspects were. And I don't know if Bauer was ever a realistic consideration for them, especially given, and I know this is a very complicated subject, but especially given the fact that Bauer had a very bad relationship with Mickey Callaway when they were both in Cleveland. And I know that obviously Callaway is almost certainly not going to be a part of whatever the Angels do going forward. But, you know, I don't know how, maybe Bauer wasn't a realistic option. Maybe Springer, maybe these guys just were not realistic options for them. But it still does feel like the Angels could have done more this offseason to raise the floor for this team a little higher.
Yeah. Well, last thing on the Angels, and we'll wrap up here, John. What do you like in the pipeline? I guess this is a combination. I think a lot of it depends on Adell. But what do you make of their pipeline? And where do you see the Angels? Is there anyone baseball fans should be looking out for in this pipeline this season and the coming seasons?
I think Adell is probably the big one. Brandon Marsh, maybe. I mean, I don't think he's played above high A ball. He reached double A in 2019, obviously didn't play last year, was at the alternate site. Maybe someone who can help if things go sideways and if he looks good in double A again. Otherwise it's mostly Adell, and that's understandable. I mean, the guy's was a number one overall, is the number one prospect in the system, you know, has shown, or, you know, obviously showed hyper athletic flashes last year, but not the total package. And I think everyone else is still either pretty far away or, you know, not really in any position to, you know, make a maximum impact. I think it really is Adell. I mean, otherwise, guy's already on the roster. I think if Canning stays healthy, he's a good bet to contribute. Obviously, Ohtani, if he stays healthy, is a very good bet. Jaime Barria looked pretty good last year. I think he's mostly in a long relief role now, but, you know, certainly an option there as a kind of fill-in starter. But it pretty much is Adele. I'll be very interested to see what happens with him, if he can kind of come back from a rough start last season. But yeah, I mean, I really just like Joe Adele. That's who I'm willing. That's who I'm waiting to see.
All right. Well, hopefully it works out there, because more young, good players is always a good thing. And it'd be fun to see him and Trout be awesome for the next several years. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here, John, yourfangraphs.com. I forgot to mention this at the top of the show, and I want to mention it very quickly here. Announced their postseason projection odds. Have you perused these yet, John?
I mean, we had them out last week, so I've been taking a look at them for a bit. Shouts to MLB for
pushing them out there. So I haven't seen them yet. This is Braves fans, I'm going to guess, are not going to react well to some of this.
No, we have the Braves
67%. Yeah. So the NL East has, so they have the Mets as the best chance to win the NL East, Cardinals barely over the Brewers in the NL Central. The NL West is still really close with the Dodgers and Padres, 96% and 92%. The AL West, Astros 71%, Angels, the team we had talked about here, 37%. The A's at 21%. Interesting. The Twins and White Sox neck and neck at 65% and 60%. The Indians all the way down there at 17%. And then the biggest stunner to me is your AL East, John, because now you're going to have to buy back in. You're going to have to buy back in on your Boston Red Sox, who have a 47% chance of making the postseason, just below the Blue Jays at 53%. So the Tampa Bay Rays, 18%. Just very fascinating. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I can't say exactly what goes into that. I'm not smart enough to know what the numbers are or really how it all gets put together. We've definitely had a bunch of annoyed Rays fans, but I think Rays fans on the whole just seem to be kind of just perpetually annoyed. I think what the idea with Boston is that, you know, if people are healthy and others kind of produce up to their previous level, you know, we're talking like, you know, if Chris Sale is back and if Eduardo Rodriguez is back and if JD Martinez hits more like, well, JD Martinez, you know, then you're looking at an improvement over last year. And especially too, because I think generally, and I know we talked about this a bit, this when we did the Red Sox, Boston should be better this year than last year. I just don't see them as any better than 500, though. I mean, that's my own disagreement with the odds. I think the Rays are probably better than they're being given credit for. But, you know, it's those numbers are also going to change a fair amount, too, I'm sure, especially, you know, with whatever schedule weirdness ends up happening because of the season. But I'm not totally down on the Red Sox. I just don't really see them as a playoff team unless a lot of stuff goes right.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that that's the case for your sanity, John. Anything that you would like to plug as we wrap up here on this Tuesday edition of the podcast?
Just for any of your listeners who are not regular Fangraphs readers or who haven't stopped by the site in a bit, we are currently amid Prospects Week, which is our big focus on all things minor leagues and farm system, including our top 100 prospects list, which comes out on Wednesday. We've already had draft ranking updates, international player ranking updates. We're going to have tons more stuff about Prospects Week or about prospects this week. So jump on over to Fangraphs if you care about the minor leagues, if you care about prospect rankings, any of that stuff, give it a look. And if you are there and you like what you see, sign up for a Fangraphs membership starting at $3 a month or $50 a year for ad-free.
Go do that. It's a great website that I check every single day, so go do that if you have not already. John, we can follow you at J.A. Taylor on Twitter. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. And for that guy up there in Manhattan, New York, for myself down here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got, my friend. Thank you, as always, for making the time, sir. And we will be back next Tuesday, where we'll talk about, oh no, Mariners or Rangers, John. Like, Mariners or Rangers is our option.
I think let's go Mariners. I mean, okay. The Rangers, the thing with the Rangers is I don't really know what more there is to say beyond that rebuild was a disaster. Their attempted skinny rebuild, you know, they just kind of exist now. I have to imagine that front office has kind of shrugged its shoulders and gone, well, what are you going to do? You know, at this point now, it does feel like a more kind of typical rebuild where it's like, well, young guys, prospects, you know, interesting signings, you know, it's that team's not going to contend. But let's talk about the Mariners. Let's talk about what Seattle wants.
All right, we'll do it. John, thank you as always, my friend, and we will talk next week.
I'm good.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.